What is going on? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the UFC 300 edition of The Proving Ground, a UFC sports betting podcast tracking the Fearless Plus Money strategy. I'm your host, The Engineer, but this week we're going to take our time and do things a bit differently, because if ever there's a time to stop and reflect on all that's happened and all that's yet to come, it's UFC 300. We're coming off another winning week, 15 units of profit at UFC Vegas 90. This is now our 12th episode, and when we started, no one was listening. Just a couple of weeks ago at UFC Atlantic City, we had almost 500 people tuning in on YouTube alone. We've gone from 0 to 1,500 followers on Twitter in the same amount of time, and it's been a rocky road. On our very first show, we lost around 8 units. Those of you who've been listening for a while know the drill. We're chasing Fearless Plus Money. If we calculate a significant edge on a plus money closing line, we bet it, no matter how crazy it sounds or how long the odds. We go where the value takes us and damn the consequences. So one episode in and we were badly down, but as we sit here today, with 11 episodes recorded, 11 UFC events, we've placed almost 100 Fearless Plus Money third-party tracked bets, and our return on investment is an amazing 10%. Sure, when you're betting almost exclusively massive underdogs, your results will be volatile. We've been up, we've been down, but one thing that I'm very confident on is that over the long run, our results will continue to be very strongly positive. Thanks for all your support. It really does mean so much to me, and I can't wait to be sitting here either recording our 100th episode or tracking our 100th unit of profit. I wonder which one will happen first. But that's enough for now. We've got more important things to talk about, like UFC 300. This is The Proving Ground. Let's find out. And in the main event of the evening, this one's for all the marbles, we have your favorite, the champion, Alex Poatan Pereira, at minus 135 with the comeback on Jamal Hill at plus 110. All right, folks, there's a few different storylines playing out here. Firstly, the instability of the light heavyweight division. Since Jiří beat Glover to win the light heavyweight title, the division has been in a state of flux. Jiří gets injured, has to vacate the belt. Jan Blachowicz and Magomed Ankalaev fight to a draw, with neither able to claim the vacant title. The UFC turns around and books Teixeira versus Jamal Hill to fight for the still vacant title. Jamal Hill wins convincingly, and then gets injured playing basketball and has to vacate the title. Meanwhile, Alex beats Jan Blachowicz to earn a shot at the still-vacant title against Jiří Prochazka. Alex wins by knockout to become a two-division champion. And for his first title defense, who is he booked against? The returning Jamal Hill, fighting to reclaim the title he never lost. Wow, that was a mouthful. But you get it. The division has been kind of all over the place, waiting for the next champion who's able to string together a few title defenses. Is Alex Pereira the one to do it? What a run this man has been on. A truly elite kickboxer, known to UFC fans for many years as the man who defeated Israel Adesanya twice in kickboxing, including once by brutal knockout. And then it happened. Alex took a few MMA fights, and in 2021, with just 4 professional bouts under his belt, Alex joined the UFC's middleweight division. With some very careful matchmaking, he quickly rattled off 3 consecutive wins to earn a shot at then middleweight champion Israel Adesanya. We all knew the narrative the UFC was crafting here. Alex is not a young man. He has a lot of miles on him and some severe limitations to his game. But there was a window to catch lightning in a bottle, rush Alex into the title picture and see if he can beat Israel Adesanya for the 3rd time, but this time in the UFC. I could not wait for this match when it was announced. It seems like whenever these guys fight, I'm on a holiday. I was sweating bullets when I realized the date for this fight fell on the first day of a trip I'd booked to Thailand, which had a fully planned back-to-back itinerary. No matter, we'd stick to the itinerary and I'd watch the fights on my phone. But as Alex and Izzy were walking out, my nerves got the better of me. Let's just sit at a coffee shop until this bad boy's done. So we sit and I'm locked in. Alex got off to a rocky start. He looked unsure and reactive with almost no volume. Right on the bell at the end of round one, Izzy uncorks a huge right hand that wobbled Alex and followed it with a left hook. Alex was out on his feet and was 100% saved by the bell. Yet somehow, Alex was fresh as a daisy to start round two, as if nothing had happened. Round two was incredibly close, with both guys landing jabs at will, extremely competitive, but it was this round where MMA fans, who hadn't seen them fight before, got to see that Alex could seriously hurt Izzy. Even though it was a 50-50 round, all of a sudden it was Izzy that I was worried for. And Alex, the world champion kickboxer, ends round two by taking Izzy down with his own version of a single leg. Round three sees Izzy score the very first takedown of his UFC career, followed by 1 or 2 mat returns. Look, it was clear that neither gentleman was an expert on the ground. But Izzy managed to wear on Alex for a few minutes and pepper him with a little ground and pound. A huge axe kick to the body of a grounded Alex finished the round. Round four sees the commentary team talking about the inexperience of Alex and how tired and low volume he now was. He wasn't used to grappling and it had exhausted him. With the fifth and final round underway, Alex starts stalking Izzy. Izzy checked a kick and tripped himself. Alex then traps him up against the cage and unloads a huge right hand, followed by a blistering combination. Izzy goes down, pops right back up, but Alex does not stop. The barrage continues until the ref steps in and waves it off, with Alex delivering a shocking standing TKO up against the cage. Four fights into his UFC career, Alex was the champion, and he'd bested Izzy once again. But as we all know, that's not the end of the story. For their fourth encounter, I was sitting in a beautiful villa in Bali watching on the big screen when Izzy marched out to face Alex once again. It was a slow round one, but already Alex is chewing Izzy's leg up with relentless low kicks. The commentary team are talking up Alex's skill and the success he's having. In the first minute of round two, Alex is stalking Izzy and pressuring him up against the cage. And with 1 minute to go, Alex wobbles Izzy with another leg kick and starts melting him up against the cage with huge combinations. And then it happens, out of nowhere. Izzy uncorks that huge counter right that puts Alex to sleep. Years of pent-up frustration instantly released. Alex is wide-eyed and motionless on the floor. And how about the celebration? I had goosebumps watching Izzy fire his invisible arrows into the frozen body of Alex before snapping his imaginary bow over his knee and walking away. We all knew that Izzy was probably the superior and more well-rounded MMA fighter, but I'd started to think Alex might just have his number for life. Not so much. So where to for here from Alex? Onwards and upwards to the light heavyweight division. A split decision win over the extremely dangerous former champion Jan Blachowicz earned him a shot against Jiří Prochazka, and here we are today. Alex, who still only has 11 professional MMA fights, no ground game to speak of, is a two-division champion facing another former champion, Jamahal Hill, in the main event of UFC 300, the biggest pay-per-view event in UFC history. Alright, let's get into the fight itself. Both men stand at 6'4" with an identical 79-inch reach. Both favour a striking heavy approach. Alex throws 5 and eats 3.5 every minute, with very high striking accuracy. Jamahal throws 7 and eats 3.5, with a little lower accuracy. Neither really shoot for takedowns, and both have decent, if not fantastic, takedown defence. Both have scary knockout power. Alex, of course, has the crisper technique, but Jamahal has the volume and the wildness on his side. I've seen a lot of love for Jamahal over the last week or so. The consensus narrative seems to be that he's the value at the window, his volume and power will serve him well, and that Alex is now older, slower, and past his prime. And I do agree that the value in terms of money lines is on Jamahal in this spot. But I also think people are writing off Alex too early. He has a real quality resume despite the lack of fights. Beating Izzy is huge. Beating Jiří is huge. I didn't think he'd get past Jan Blachowicz. He destroyed Sean Strickland. His resume is easily more impressive than Jamahal's. Jamahal is 32 years old and only has 13 professional fights. His best win is obvious. It's Glover Teixeira. Of course, Glover is 44 years old. So who is the next best win on Jamahal Hill's resume? Maybe Johnny Walker. Personally, I think there are more unknowns on the Hill side and is coming off a lengthy layoff due to that gnarly Achilles injury. We know how this fight will likely play out. Hill has never landed a takedown in the UFC, although shooting a few might actually serve him well here. Alex rarely shoots, and I mean, why would he? Each will take their turn in pressuring and forcing the action. Jamahal will be the higher volume overall, whilst Alex will pick his shots. Much has been made of the fact that Jamahal is a southpaw, potentially limiting Alex's ability to use one of his best weapons, the low leg kick. Personally, I don't think it matters so much. A striker of the caliber of Alex is perfectly capable of landing on southpaws or orthodox, and Alex also switches stances himself from time to time. This should be a striker's delight, and let's hope this one goes long. I certainly think it has the potential to do so. The numbers and my handicapping say Jamahal should be favoured to win. Vegas disagrees, and so does my heart. In a striker's delight, I'm always going to favour the Glory Kickboxing World Champion, the two-division UFC champion, the only man to knock out Israel Adesanya not once, but twice. I'm going to be riding with my boy Poatan, so give me Alex Pereira to win this fight. And whilst the fight probably ends early, Poatan fights do tend to go long sometimes when you least expect, particularly against other strikers. So, for our official bets, give me fight starts round 4 at plus 160, fight starts round 5 at plus 230, and fight goes to decision at plus 280. And in the co-main event of the evening in the women's strawweight division, we have your favourite, the champion, Zhang Wei Li at minus 500, with the comeback on your underdog, the challenger, Yan Xiaonan at plus 360. I cannot wait for this fight, our second title fight of the night. It reminds me a little bit of Alex versus Yiri in a way, in that I just don't know who to cheer for. I'm a huge fan of both these fighters. It would have been great for this fight to be in China, but it wasn't meant to be. Never mind, we're still getting the right match at the right time with the right stakes. After losing back-to-back fights to Thug Rose Namajunas, Zhang has been unstoppable. She destroyed Joanna in the rematch. She destroyed Carla Esparza. One of my biggest ever bets was on Zhang in this fight. And she was extremely dominant last time out against the very dangerous Amanda Lemos. Zhang can do it all. She's a wrecking ball, a very active and competent striker with excellent wrestling and heavy top control to match. Zhang is comfortable wherever the fight goes. If she has a weakness, or should I say, if there is an area in which she is more in line with peers rather than surpassing them, it's striking at range. Zhang much prefers to be in the pocket or wrestling range, and in fact, this was part of the issue in her fights against Rose. Yan, meanwhile, has been in excellent form too. After suffering setbacks to Carla Esparza and Marina Rodriguez, she's now won two fights in a row, with a hard-fought five-round decision against Mackenzie Dern and a shocking first-round knockout of Jessica Andrade. Her striking stats look similar to Zhang's, but the style is very different. They're basically the same height and reach, but Yan fights a lot taller and does some of her best work at range. She'll have a clear advantage in the fight in that area. Where Zhang has a clear advantage, though, is on the ground and in the pocket. You won't see Yan shooting for many takedowns here, and one of her keys to victory will be keeping Zhang at range, picking her apart, and making sure that Zhang does not get in on those hips. After all, that's how Rose beat Zhang twice. I still to this day cannot believe that Zhang lost to Thug Rose. Zhang certainly has more paths to victory, has the better resume, and has been more dominant over the past few years, and she is your rightful favourite in this spot. But I do think the money lines are now out of control. Everyone must be filling up their parlays with the Zhang money line. There is a strong edge here on Yan. I don't think she'll win, but the value is compelling. And if Yan can keep her at range, well, she does have a chance. So for our official bet, give me the Yan money line at plus 360. And in the men's lightweight division, we have our third title fight of the night. Justin, the highlight, Gaethje at minus 164 with the comeback on Max Blessed Holloway at plus 132. Look, regardless of your thoughts on the merits of the BMF title and what it may or may not mean, this fight is amazing. At least it's five rounds. It hasn't even happened yet, and already some people are calling it as the likely fight of the year. This is exactly the kind of fun fight we're all so happy to see Max in. And I'm not sure if his stay at lightweight will be a lengthy one. He'll probably switch back down to featherweight post this. But this promises to be an amazing fight. When it was booked, there was a little negativity. It's unclear what the stakes really were for both. And if Gaethje wasn't booked here, he'd be right near the front of the queue for a lightweight title shot. As for Max, there was some negativity around his move back to lightweight, given how he fared last time out at 155 against Dustin Poirier. But look, they're the same height. The reach is almost the same too. Max is incredibly durable. I'm not suggesting that taking 25 minutes of punishment at the hands of Justin Gaethje is a good idea for anyone. But Max can match the output, if not the power. And his striking defense is extremely strong. In 29 pro fights, Justin has one win by submission. And in 32 professional fights, Max has just two. So, I don't think we'll be seeing a submission here. What we will see is a striker's delight once again in one that could easily go the full 25. No one has ever put Max away properly. There is a small slither of value on the Max money line here, but I'll be sitting back and watching this one from the couch. So give me the underdog, Max Blessed Holloway, to win this fight. And staying in the men's lightweight division, we have your favourite, Arman Tsarukyan at minus 217 with the comeback on the former champion, Charles Oliveira, Chucky Olives to those lucky enough to call him a friend, at plus 170. The man, the myth, the legend, Chucky Olives. Charles rattled off 11 wins in a row to capture and defend the lightweight title. entering himself into the conversation at the time for the greatest lightweight champion of all time. I don't think anyone is still pushing that narrative, but it was certainly getting some airtime during his run. But really, what made Charles's run so fun, so special, so magic, was that he was extremely vulnerable throughout. He gets clipped, he gets knocked down in almost every fight. He's had many losses earlier in his career. The narrative on Charles was in. He didn't have the heart to persevere when the going got tough. It was true until it wasn't. During his run, Charles continued to face that same adversity. He was hurt in almost every fight, but he was so willing to throw himself into the fire because he knew that he could persevere and come out the other side. Now, losing the title to Islam Makhachev was hardly a surprising outcome, and there's no shame there. And Charles looked great next time out against Beneil Dariush, winning by knockout late in round one. Part of Charles' aura is that he does get hurt, but he immediately flops to his back. And there is a real hesitance on the part of his opponents to follow Charles to the ground for fear of his jiu-jitsu game. Makhachev, however, had no such concerns, and I don't think Armin will either. Armin has had quite the UFC run himself. He actually faced Islam Makhachev in his UFC debut back in 2019, losing by decision. Since then, he's won 8 of 9, with the only loss coming in a very contentious 5-round decision against Matush Gamrot. The fight will be competitive on the feet, and if Armin pursues his takedown-heavy strategy here, look for him to favour top position over submission, maintain heavy top pressure, control Charles for minutes at a time, and do damage with ground and pound. Let's see if Charles can recapture the magic here. I see this fight as close to a coin flip, with Armin probably slightly favoured to win. But there's less than zero value on his money line. The Chucky Olives money line or an early Charles stoppage looks to be the best value at the window to me, but I'll be enjoying this one from the couch. And moving to the men's middleweight division, we have your favourite, Bo Nickel, at minus 2,500 with the comeback on your underdog, Cody Brundage, at plus 1,200. I'll keep this one brief. No point debating the merits of opening the main card of UFC 300 with a minus 2,500 favourite against Cody Brundage. The UFC think they have a star in Bo Nickel, and that's how they're building him. His 5-0 to start his career, with all 5 wins coming by way of stoppage. The wrestling is world class, it translates very well to MMA, and the striking is competent and improving, but is yet to face a ranked opponent, and Brundage, meanwhile, is riding back-to-back wins. Look, of course, one of those was a DQ win over Jacob Malkoon, and, well, let's just say I don't think Brundage should have won that fight. He was clearly losing. If the fight hits the floor, it'll be a very difficult night at the office for Brundage. He does have decent takedown defense, but it has yet to be tested against the likes of Bo Nickel. Look, I don't think Brundage will win, obviously. I'm not sure that someone with 5 pro fights should be a minus 2,500 favorite against anyone, though, let alone against someone with 8 UFC starts under their belt. The money lines are out of control. I feel a little sheepish about it, but given the value for our official bet, give me the Cody Brundage money line at plus 1,200. And almost as controversial, we'll also be taking fight starts round 2 at plus 165, fight starts round 3 at plus 480, and fight goes to decision at plus 600. And returning to the men's light heavyweight division, we have the closely lined Alexander Rakic at minus 116 with a comeback on Yuri Prohashka at minus 106. This is one of the fights I am most looking forward to on the whole entire card. Yuri fascinates me. He's one of my favourite fighters. It's just so much fun to watch Yuri fight. Zero defensive responsibility, maximum violence, power, creativity, reckless abandon. And with a 29-4 record, it usually works for him. That lack of defensive responsibility certainly cost him last time out against Alex Pereira, but that's just it. Real ones know. You have to take the good with the bad when it comes to the UFC generally, and particularly in relation to my man Yuri Prohashka. Rakic, meanwhile, is coming back after a lengthy injury layoff. He'll have the crisper boxing, he's more technical all around, with vastly superior striking defense. He also has quite strong takedown defense if required. So, a technically very sound fighter against a wild samurai. It's a role that Yuri has found himself in many times before, and look, we just don't know how Rakic will go following that MCL tear. Let's be honest, I'll pick Yuri against almost anyone, and certainly against Alexander Rakic. So give me Yuri Prohashka to win this fight. And in the men's featherweight division, we have your favourite, the former men's bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Aljo Sterling at minus 179 with the comeback on Calvin Kattar at plus 143. You may have noticed a theme here, folks. Champions and former champions facing people coming off lengthy injury layoffs. And that's exactly what's coming our way in this fight too. After losing the bantamweight title to Sugar Sean last time out, Aljo has now committed to moving up to featherweight. He was always big for the bantamweight division, and I think he'll look right at home here at featherweight. Although Cater is a lot taller, the reach is almost identical. Cater, meanwhile, is riding a two-fight skid and has been out of action since injuring his knee last time out in 2022 against Arnold Allen. Who knows how he will look after so long away. Aljo's path to victory is clear. Close the distance, clinch, pressure against the fence, get the fight to the floor, backpack Cater and either finish him or grind out a dominant decision win. Cater, meanwhile, must keep the fight standing. And with a takedown defense rate in excess of 90% over a large sample size, there is a real world in which that happens. Despite some unusual-looking striking defense statistics, Cater is certainly there to be hit. He should have a clear advantage on the feet over Aljo. I'm siding with a lot of underdogs here, and I just can't shake the feeling that this is a spot set up for Aljo to win, but there may be a few surprises, so give me Calvin Cater to win this fight. And moving to the women's bantamweight division, we have the UFC debut of the Olympic gold medalist and former PFL champion, Kayla Harrison, at minus 475, with a comeback on Holly Holm, the preacher's daughter, at plus 360. All right, the UFC debut of Kayla Harrison. At this point, we all know the story. Olympic gold medalist in judo, a dominant PFL champion, who boasted a 15-0 undefeated professional MMA record before running into Larissa Pacheco for a third time in November of 2022. That fight still confuses me. I think Kayla just gassed after being so dominant in round one. She bounced back against Aspen Ladd last time out in her final PFL fight, and she has now signed with the UFC to make her debut this weekend against none other than the preacher's daughter, Holly Holm. The main narrative leading up to this fight has been the weight cut. Of course, as we all know, Kayla typically fought 155 pounds, a weight class not offered for females in the UFC. She'll be stepping out at 135 pounds this weekend. How is that possible? Not sure. But she says she's done a test cut with no issues. She's an Olympic gold medalist after all, so let's assume that she has the discipline, mindset, and experience to win the first battle of the week on the scales. As for her opponent, the 42-year-old perpetual contender Holly Holm, we all know what we're getting here. She likes to rack up control time with the clinch work, pressure, dirty boxing, scoring points on the outside with a kickboxing heavy style. The only problem with all of that is that the clinch work up against the fence will play right into the hands of Kayla Harrison. You have to assume that she's the stronger woman in this fight, and closing the distance will allow her to get the judo game going. I'm a little gun-shy after the Pacheco fight, and Holmes' experience will serve her well here, but give me Kayla Harrison to win this fight. Returning once again to the men's featherweight division, we have your favourite Diego Lopes at minus 143 with a comeback on Sadiq Youssef at plus 117. Fascinating matchmaking here. Youssef was given the veteran test last time out against Edson Barboza and came up short. He looked great until he didn't. Barboza outlasted and outwitted him over 25 minutes. Youssef does have a fantastic record, but he has fallen when facing the upper echelon of the featherweight division. This time out, he has a different challenge. Lopes is not a grizzled veteran. He's a fellow surging prospect. But the early signs are the upper echelon of the division is definitely where Lopes belongs. On the feet, Youssef should have the clear advantage. Lopes is low volume and has quite low striking defense, but on the ground, if the fight gets there, his jiu-jitsu is simply on another level. If he gets Youssef to the floor even once, that may well be enough. The money lines look about right to me, so give me Diego Lopes to win this fight, and I'll be sitting this one out. And in the men's lightweight division, we have your favorite, Jalen Turner at minus 250 with a comeback on Manny Moicano at plus 200. I'm a big fan of Jalen Turner, and of course, a 6'3" lightweight is going to capture the attention and imagination of many fans. Turner has been improving and has put quite the run together, winning 5 fights in a row before dropping back-to-back split decisions against top contenders in Matush Gamrot and Dan Hooker. Look, we're still working on forgiving Turner and referee Kerry Hatley for what Turner did to Bobby Green last time out. Let's just say that Turner won by way of first round knockout and leave it at that. He'll have 4 inches of height and 5 inches of reach this time out against Moicano. Moicano, meanwhile, is coming off back-to-back wins and has now won 4 out of his last 5. More importantly, he's become a real fan favourite since his Moicano wants money post-fight speech in November of 2022. There is strong value on the Moicano money line here, no pun intended, and I don't think Turner should be a minus 250 favourite. But I do think he'll win. He has all the physical advantages, a well-rounded skill set, is in his athletic prime, and has been getting better each time out. Moicano is exactly the veteran test that Turner needs. So give me Jalen Turner to win this fight. And in the strawweight division, we have your favourite Jessica Andrade at minus 135 with the comeback on Marina Rodriguez at plus 110. Watching Andrade lose three fights in a row in 2023, all by way of finish, was not fun. Not that she seemed fazed. So it was a huge relief to see her bounce back with a dominant TKO victory over Mackenzie Dern last time out. Rodriguez similarly bounced back last time out with a dominant and difficult to watch finish of Michelle Watterson Gomez, the karate hottie. I love the karate hottie, so I did not enjoy that fight at all. Although the fight reached 1.5 rounds, allowing me to cash a very large parlay by 12 seconds, so I'm still a fan for life, karate hottie. Look for Andrade to come out like a house on fire as always. She'll get in Rodriguez's face, make it ugly, look to overwhelm her and take the fight to the floor. If the fight does end up there, the skill gap will be monumental. Conversely, Rodriguez will look to keep the fight at range and do damage from the outside. I do wonder if the decline of Jessica Andrade has been a little bit overstated, and I like this matchup for her. So give me Jessica Andrade to win this fight. The money lines are set perfectly, so unless I can find a prop that tempts me, I'll be sitting this one out. Returning once again to the Cadillac division of the UFC, the men's lightweight division, we have your favourite, Bobby King Green at minus 180 with a comeback on Jim Miller at plus 145. Bobby Green was riding high after back-to-back wins over Tony Ferguson and a very unexpected win against Grant Dawson. He's become a real fan favourite, and for long-time fans of the sport, who've seen Bobby Green's career for more than a decade, it was very satisfying to finally see this man get his flowers. That all came crashing down last time out when he suffered a brutal KO loss to Jalen Turner, as we mentioned earlier. The less said about that fight, the better. Look, he might be early on the card here, but Bobby King Green is on UFC 300, and we love that for him. This time out, he'll be against an absolute legend of the game, the man who always was going to be featured on this card, Jim Miller. As we all know, Jim Miller fought at UFC 100, he fought on UFC 200, and here he is once again at UFC 300. Jim Miller is 40 years old, riding a 2-fight win streak, and has won 5 out of his last 6 fights. Miller has not won by decision since 2016. In fact, his last 9 victories have been by way of finish. And if he wins here, I think that's how he gets it done. On the feet, Bobby, of course, will have the crisper boxing. Jim Miller is a wild man. Look for an extremely aggressive start, with Miller seeking to get Bobby out of there early and often in round 1. He also has the option of taking the fight to the floor, where he should have a strong advantage. And look, he might be a plus 145 dog here, but given his fast starts, his finishing upside, and his advantage on the floor, give me Jim Miller to win this fight. There is a strong edge on his money line too, just not quite high enough to tempt me. And in our first fight of the evening in the men's bantamweight division, we have 2 former champions. Your favourite, Davison Figueiredo, is at minus 333 with a comeback on Cody Garbrandt at plus 250. Look, I'm always a little cautious about overplayed narratives, and Davison Figueiredo chinning Cody Garbrandt early is about as dominant a narrative as you'll see. He might be riding a 2-fight win streak, but Cody has only won 3 of his last 8 fights and has suffered a series of nasty KO defeats. Despite being 36 years of age, Figueiredo is a clear favourite. He's upper weight class, but he won't have a drastic weight cut to contend with this time. And if there's one thing that Davison has in spades, it's power. No doubt he'll be looking to get Garbrandt out of there early, and part of me really wants to see a Garbrandt resurgence. That would just be so much fun. But Figueiredo is an elite fighter with a skill set that plays very well against the weaknesses of Garbrandt. The money lines look fair, and I don't think there's a lot of value taking Figueiredo straight. So, to recap our official bets for UFC 300, we have the main event starts round 4 at plus 160, main event starts round 5 at plus 230, and main event goes to decision at plus 280. We have the Yarn money line at plus 360. We have the Brundage money line at plus 1200. And in the Bo Nickel Cody Brundage fight, we have fight starts round 2 at plus 165, fight starts round 3 at plus 480, and fight goes to decision at plus 600. That's it for now, folks. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe on X, the_engineerMMA, on YouTube at The Proving Ground MMA. Find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or reach me by email, engineer@theprovinggroundmma.com. Best of luck with your bets, and let's find out.